Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at offbeatoregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. It's Thursday, so this is an archive show, first published as a newspaper column and podcast episode sometime in the last 10 years. Thanks for downloading, and I hope you enjoy our show. A few dozen miles southwest of Baker City, if you know just right where to look, you might stumble across a few weather-beaten gravestones, all that's left of an old cemetery. And that old cemetery is all that's left of what might have been the biggest city in Oregon at one time, a teeming, rough-hewn metropolis of 6,000 souls that was called Auburn, Oregon. Auburn was ground zero in the great Eastern Oregon Gold Rush. It was a massive mining camp, pure and simple. It was founded in the spring of 1861, and by 1864 it was already fading away. The story of Auburn's founding is as colorful as any of the dramas that played out in its streets. It seems that back in 1861, a prospector named John Adams was in Portland, flashing gold nuggets around and trying to recruit a mining party. He claimed he'd stumbled across the legendary Blue Bucket Mine, but the Native Americans were too hostile for him to risk sticking around, so he needed some strong friends to come and work it with him. In short order, he had a group of some 70 eager miners ready to go. And off they went into the hills. The newcomer soon grew suspicious, though. Adams was not acting like a man who knew where he was going. He was poking around, digging holes, doing exploratory mining, like a regular prospector. He was not behaving like a guy who was leading a group back to a place he knew was loaded with gold. Now suspicious, the new miners questioned Mr. Adams closely, using, shall we say, enhanced interrogation techniques. Finally, he admitted it. He'd made the whole thing up. All he'd wanted was to have a big enough party to be able to prospect without worrying about Indian attacks. Well, some of the miners Adams had recruited had sacrificed a lot to seize the opportunity that they thought he was offering them. There were crops rotting in the ground, donation land claims reverting to the government, brides-to-be left crying at the altar. Some of these guys now wanted blood. After a long and lively argument between the miners who wanted to lynch him on the spot and the ones who wanted to spare his life, a compromise was reached. Adams would be kicked out of camp with no gun, no horse, no knife, and no blanket. All they'd give him was 15 minutes in which to get himself lost, after which anybody with a clear shot at him would be welcome to go ahead and take it. That done, the would-be miners turned and headed for home. On the way, a group of them stopped to camp for the night in a flat spot by a small creek. And one of them, Henry Griffin, dug a test hole while dinner was cooking. 3 feet down, he hit bedrock and gold. It wasn't the Blue Bucket Mine, but it was a lot of gold. Adams, by the way, had been following the party at a distance. Some of his friends had been supplying him with food. After this happy discovery, several sources say he was allowed to rejoin the party and stake his own mining claim. I haven't been able to verify this, but it is a nice thought. Word soon got back to Walla Walla and the Dalles, and soon miners were pouring into the area, along with all those gamblers, saloon keepers, prostitutes, gunfighters, and general-purpose roustabouts that always seemed to show up to help get the miners comfortable. Together, this motley array of entrepreneurial humanity got busy forming a sort of rough-hewn town made chiefly out of log huts and canvas tents. They called it Auburn. The law in Auburn was of the classic rough-cut frontier kind. The citizens actually drew up a legal code. It specifically outlawed shooting at or stabbing people in public places, for starters. Presumably, if you wanted to murder someone, you were expected to get a room. It also forbade drawing any deadly weapon with the intent to use it, and, quote, drunk and riotous conduct in the streets. Other than that, it was pretty much game on. At first, the town was part of Wasco County, but the county seat was 300 miles away in the Dalles. Dick Pinterich writes that one miner, arrested for killing his partner in their tent, claimed self-defense, and the townspeople decided to send him to the Dalles for trial. Two men agreed to escort him there, and the townspeople advanced $50 for their expenses. The three of them then vanished, but were seen later prospecting together in Idaho. Quote, "No doubt with $50 worth of new tools," Pinterich observes wryly. Generally, though, the murder rate in Auburn was kept relatively low by the ferociousness of what passed for justice there. That ferociousness seems to have been reserved primarily for quote-unquote foreigners, though. Frenchmen, Mexicans, and Chileans. The most notorious incident in Auburn's short history happened when a Latino man known to history only as Spanish Tom strolled into a saloon one November night in 1862 and tried to get in on a card game being played by Henry Labarree and Jack Desmond. The problem was he had no cash to ante up, and the other two weren't interested in Spanish Tom's IOUs. Voices were raised, and then Spanish Tom pulled a knife, and a couple of seconds later he was running out the door as Labarree and Desmond lay bleeding, dying or already dead, on the floor behind him. When Spanish Tom was recaptured a couple days later, the sheriff and justice of the peace tried to initiate the prosecution process. The two officials started making ready for a speedy trial, followed probably by a speedier execution, but the other 5,998 residents of Auburn seemed not to be in a patient mood. Soon a mob surrounded the judge's office. They weren't here for the trial. They wanted the prisoner. Now. The judge, when he saw which way the wind was blowing, grabbed his docket and ran for his life, leaving the sheriff to hold his ground, which he made a valiant effort to do. But the mob got hold of Spanish Tom's leg iron and used it to drag him away to the hanging tree, letting his head bounce on the ground as they ran. One of Spanish Tom's friends, whose name is also lost to history, tried to put him out of his misery with a shot but missed him and instead wounded three members of the mob. Other members of the mob gave chase as Tom's friend ran for his life. He was too slow. He probably could have outrun the mob, but he couldn't outrun their bullets. Eventually, the mob got Spanish Tom to the tree and found him already dead. But they strung him up anyway. And a few weeks later, the sheriff started construction on a new jail, one clearly designed to withstand siege by angry mobs. The gold in Auburn was gone in what must have seemed like the blink of an eye. 6,000 eager miners can get a whole lot of dirt dug up and moved around, and it took them just 2 summers to do it. By 1864, the Salem Statesman reported that the town was all but deserted. The action had moved to other nearby towns like Sumter and Baker City, which had more going for them than just proximity to the gold fields. Today, those gravestones are all that's left. If you look around, you'll find the graves of Spanish Tom's two murder victims and of Henry Griffin, the guy who started it all. You'll also find plenty of anonymous graves, marked only by a dip in the ground where the coffin collapsed. Like the people buried in those graves, Auburn is long gone. This story was first published on September 30th of 2012, under the headline Auburn, a long-gone ghost town's short but colorful past. Key sources included works by Dick Pinterich, Vern Bright, Virginia Duffy McLaughlin, and OregonEncyclopedia.org. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. What you've been listening to is one of more than 550 stories originally created and published as newspaper columns in first-run syndication between 2008 and today. You can read them all at offbeatoregon.com. Offbeat Oregon is a division of Pulplit Productions, pulp-lit.com, a boutique publishing house owned and operated by yours truly, specializing in audiobook and multimedia editions of the work of the classic pre-war pulp writers. This podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license type CC by SA 4.0, which basically means you can do anything with the content you like, so long as you A, give me credit for it, and B, whatever you make is also released under a Creative Commons license. But if you need a waiver to either A or B, hit me up, fj@offbeatoregon.com. I've never said no yet to a request for a waiver of one of those conditions. They're generally there just to prevent me from accidentally authorizing the reuse of something I don't actually control the rights to. A good example might be a photograph used by special permission of the rights holder. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Questions, critiques, ideas for a future episode? Email me at fj@offbeatoregon.com. Episodes of Offbeat Oregon History are uploaded around 6 a.m. every single weekday, so the next one will be on your device and ready to go before you know it. Until then, go out and fill up the rest of the day with good stuff.
Bye now.